when you step outside of that community and you start to learn about other ones, you feel like a stranger. But then having those conversations and learning about somebody else's life and hearing how they feel like a stranger, then you have a common experience. So almost by exploring all these different cultures and peoples and communities, you really then become a common people. So what divides us can ultimately unite us.
Hi, I'm Nora Jones. Welcome to It's About Language. This podcast connects language and culture to life, learning, and hope. You'll experience insightful conversations with creative leaders in the fields of education, business, arts, and science. My guests shed light on the impact of language and culture on individuals and society as they share their stories and experiences. You'll be informed and inspired as we explore how language and culture make us human and bring hope in the midst of a challenging world. Well, it is my great pleasure to be able to welcome my friends Charlotte Payton and Yvonne Mage. Excuse me, Mages. I'm going to do that every single time. Yvonne, that's so much fun to be able to know that we're all still learning language and messing up. Isn't that great? And here today with you have wonderful experiences that you have had linguistically and culturally, and we've had so much fun talking about. So I'm going to start with you, Yvonne. What your background is and what you're bringing today to the conversation. Where do you come from? Why do you have language and culture in your life?
Very good. Well, lovely to connect with you, Nora. And I will start by saying that my maiden name was a lot easier. It's Connolly. And I probably should never have switched to Mages. And when I suggested to my husband that I change it at one point on my resume, he looked at me with, big eyes. I am from Galway City in the west of Ireland. And I was born and raised there in a family of five. And my parents, and Ireland being an island nation, a very small island nation. And when I was growing up, 50% of the population was under 25 and high unemployment. So our best export was its people. And I guess when we're nicknamed or dubbed a land of saints and scholars. We sent a lot of scholars away from the shore. And so I studied languages in Ireland, in my hometown, NUIG, the National University of Galway, and German, French, and Spanish, and took to the airwaves as part of my journey. And so that's how I got my start. And the languages have carried me around the world ever since, my love of them and how they've kind of shaped me personally and professionally.
Fantastic. And that's certainly an array of languages that you just articulated there. How about you, Charlotte? What about your background linguistically and culturally?
Well, I, as Yvonne, was born abroad, or, not in the United States. I was born in the Netherlands. Although it's not a tiny island, it is a tiny country. And my parents were driven by the dream of American land and moved to Minnesota when I was just 3 years old. And so we moved there, and I distinctly remember my very first day of nursery school, sitting in the room with all these people making such strange sounds, and none of them were words. I couldn't hear any distinguishment. And my neighbor was also an immigrant. So the two of us, she from Croatia and I from the Netherlands, would sit there together speaking our own language and somehow making a connection. So from a very young age, I was exposed to another language. And I would say I grew up bilingually, beyond that, those first few months of being in the United States. And so in my home, we always spoke Dutch, and outside of the home was English, and those two worlds were very separate. And I still have this affinity to anyone who I've come across who speaks Dutch feels like they're part of my family. So if I'm in the middle of DC in a museum and someone walks up, and is speaking Dutch behind me, I have this just an instinct to welcome them into my home because they feel like they should be my family.
That is very interesting. Very interesting. You know, it's interesting because both of you have a linguistic identity as well as a cultural identity. And one of the things that fascinates me about this is, for just a moment, can you guys both talk about then how it does feel like, Charlotte, you mentioned about if someone's speaking Dutch, that means family. Yvonne, how do you feel about the Irish specifically? I mean, you had, 13 years studied Gaelic along with those others?
I did. So, of course, only about 5% of the country speaks Gaelic, or we call it Irish natively, but I happened to go to an all-Irish school, so I studied English poetry through the medium of Irish. Oh. But just as Charlotte said, to me, anyone Irish is also family, so I'm getting a strong visual of sitting having breakfast in Sydney. That used to be my sales territory for a company, and you know, just seeing a couple of fellas jogging along the harbour there, and you could just tell map of Ireland on their face, and it's almost like you just give each other the silent nod, that you just recognise each other, and it's such a strong connection, and it's a tiny country. We spend our time when we meet somebody from Ireland trying to find that connection. Who knows who, and you know, are we relatives? So I will always have that strong pull.
Interesting. And how about for you, Charlotte? Same kind of feeling? How does it relate to your experience?
Yeah, I would say it's very similar. The Dutch are very distinct looking. We are very tall. And I know you guys can't see me, but I'm extremely tall. So I can identify a Dutch person from quite afar. And they can identify me too. So I think it's very similar. You see one another and you know instantly that you have that connection. And it's also a small country. So despite it being heavily populated, I think every Dutch person feels the same, that you must have someone in common, or some, you know, town or neighborhood in common, because it is just such a small country.
Well, that's something interesting that both of you have brought now twice. The fact that it's a small population, your identification with your community includes that it's a limited number of people. It makes it even more, you hunger for it even more, it sounds like.
Yeah, there's just fewer people in the world that have that same background, who speak the same language as you do. So, you know, if you're an American, U.S. American, and you go abroad, you know, that's such a big population, you're very likely to run into someone else from the United States. But, you know, finding someone else from the Netherlands and has a very distinct accent as well. So you know, it's smaller. So you, and they have the same feeling. You know, it's a small country. Most people don't know where the Netherlands is. Very often it's confused with Denmark.
Ouch.
Because we speak Dutch and Danish, and, you know, the majority of people don't understand the distinction. So, you know, as a Dutch person, you're very accustomed to saying, okay, so the Netherlands and Holland, and let me show you where it is on the map, and this is the language we speak. And, you know, there's a little bit of education. So when you run into someone who not only knows where the Netherlands is and that you speak Dutch, but they're actually from there, you know, you have that deeper connection.
Yvonne, do you ever have trouble with people recognizing where Ireland is on a map? Because Charlotte, I'm still very appalled that that's true, but I'll take it. How about you, Yvonne? Do people wonder where Ireland is? Or
they generally have a sense of where it is, but we get a lot of, oh, you're part of the UK. And I have to gently remind them, no, we're not. But I mean, obviously, we have Northern Ireland, which is a UK allegiance. But yeah, I do a lot of explaining around that. But I suppose so many Irish made their way to America that a lot of people have a strong identity or cultural connection back to Ireland. So they generally know where it is.
Thank you for explaining that. Now, one of the pathways I'm going to go down here includes a bit more of an introduction than I provided at the opening of our conversation, namely that both of you work for Vista Higher Learning, a world language educational materials publishing company. As a result, you are embedded inside language learning, cultural learning, and so forth. So here I'm going to turn again to your personal experience with language as you also filter it through this professional that you have. Because you are coming from places where there are fewer people that speak Dutch, fewer people that speak Gaelic, sometimes people find trying to map that sensitizes you to community feeling that, as you said, Charlotte, so there's so many people that speak English, it's kind of almost dissipates that feeling in a way. Am I hitting on something here that you think might be a contrast in the way that you experience language and culture because of your background?
Oh, I think so. Absolutely.
How so?
I think everybody is looking for community, right? We're all trying to find a group that we belong to, that we have something in common with. And so, having this kind of small population that speaks the same language and looks similar or celebrates the same holidays, it gives you an instant sense of community. And then you also, it expands beyond that because, I spoke about Denmark being, confused, but it is kind of it's a Northern European country, and the Germans have a very similar language. So you kind of then go beyond that. Okay, here's my little country that I have community with, but then it kind of, it fingers out to other countries that are around it or countries that have similar culture, and your community begins to expand.
Interesting.
And I think understanding a different culture and language also, it expands your world outlook. And, when you start to delve into, culture a little more deeply and finding similarities and differences between how different cultures celebrate holidays or birthdays or what kinds of foods they eat, that community expands then again, even a deeper level.
Do you think that that's more likely to have happened to you because of the sensitivity that you have to language and culture through your background?
Absolutely. I mean, when you're sitting at the lunch table as a small child, and you pull out your homemade dark brown bread with weird, white cheese that doesn't look like cheddar or American cheese, and everybody analyzes, mm-hmm. your choice of food. That's the first, differentiation. You look different, you eat different things, and you sound different. So I think from a very young age, I understood the difference between cultures and how it starts to form your identity. And I guess as all kids too, trying to assimilate a little bit to the culture you're living in. So I think culture and background has been in the forefront of my, every day since I can remember, because it's made me feel different, from mm-hmm. the beginning. So.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. How about for you, Yvonne?
It was great to hear Charlotte go first, because this was a tough enough question for me, but I was reflecting. So again, Ireland is English speaking, with about 5% of it speaking Irish natively. And of course, we had a long relationship, through centuries, where it diminished as a language through the troubles, right, between England and that. So my own relationship to my own native language is a bit complex, because I grew up against the backdrop of those troubles. It was interesting. I was reading some article about COVID and the way people have reacted to it and that. And I think because my whole childhood was permeated by the backdrop of Belfast and troubles, I'm quite resilient and full of grit or in for the long haul of what it means to grow up against that backdrop. So living through this pandemic, I've dealt with it easily enough, if that makes sense. And so for me, other languages held greater appeal. The lure of the continent, the lure of learning French and Spanish. And I often think jokingly say feel in another life I was Spanish. it was a complex enough country to grow up in the sense of culture and language. I hope that resonates or makes sense in some way.
It does, but I will like to follow up on that a little bit. I'd like you to help me to understand when you made this statement about turning to the continent, it almost sounded like you were turning to the continent for relief in the midst of troubles. Help me to understand whether I misunderstood that, or if I did understand it, how language and culture played into all of that.
Yeah, I guess it was a kind of a safer space. And I'm just thinking in later years, when we had the financial boom in the 80s or 90s, that also happened in Ireland. And then our language and our culture became quite glamorized. If you've heard of Riverdance, right?
Yes.
That became a brand identity and suddenly people were proud. But that wasn't, you know, I grew up, I was born in the 60s. So in my 70s, my formative years, it was quite different. And then much later on, it became a very prideful thing to speak Irish, to know a bit of Irish, to be able to Irish dance. So for me, when my father, who was really a Renaissance man, you know, taking us on the ferry over to France and Spain, it opened up this much broader and I guess, yes, safer or glamorous or exotic world that really was appealing to me and to my siblings too.
Phenomenal, phenomenal. It's so tempting for me to want to go through the images of diminishment, which you referred to, Yvonne, and Charlotte learning about, you know, whether or not you felt, well, in fact, you shared with me at one point that, for example, when you came to the United States, that instead of being placed in a class to learn English, you were put into remedial work. There's sometimes a diminishment of our language and cultural experiences when it's not understood. Can you speak a little bit more about those, both of you?
I'm happy to jump in if you like. You know, just yesterday I had the chance to listen to your previous podcast with John DeMatta, and he talked about the experiences he has with when he's in Uber or he's driving Uber and connecting with other cultures and that. And today I often meet people. I'm naturally curious or interested in people. And so I'm always interested to know where they're from. And sometimes I can find a real hesitancy in people. And then I tell them where I work for Vista Higher Learning and the community that is for languages, and we end up having a great conversation, but I can see their shyness and hesitancy, and you know, it's kind of something to behold, because we should be proud of our identity and not afraid of having a different accent, sounding different. So I use every chance in an Uber to you know, give them that peacock moment, praise their language acquisition and encourage them to feel good.
Phenomenal. Charlotte, how about for you?
Yeah, so when I came to the States in the 70s, I was living in Minnesota, which is, you know, filled with Northern Europeans, to be honest, but Northern Europeans have been there for generations and generations. And it was certainly, you know, I was the odd duck in my community, with the exception of my one neighbor who was also an immigrant. Just by coincidence, the two of us were kind of the only two. And we approached it very differently. And, you know, I don't know if it's, you know, a household attitude that you get from your parents or if it's innate in yourself, but I was always very proud of being Dutch. And I didn't mind speaking it, you know, with my parents out in public. I didn't mind talking about it or sharing about it. But she was very shy. She felt like it made her excluded from the community. So the way that the two of us kind of approached being bilingual as young girls in Minnesota was very different. But I always felt like it was something that was unique, and I didn't mind being unique. And I guess, you know, I talked about being very tall too, so I stood out anyway. So I guess I didn't mind if I stood out that way too. But I was lucky enough to be in a high school where we started learning languages pretty early, and I took French classes and I took German classes. And just like Ivan, I was very curious and excited to kind of expand my ability to speak another language. You know, unfortunately, as I've grown older, I get to practice those things less, even though I work for a language company. You would think I would get more opportunity, but, you know, it gets a little rusty if you don't really go in depth with it. But, that for me, I definitely have always been proud to share it. And as Ivan said too, I love running into other people who come from different backgrounds and different countries. And, I actually studied anthropology in college for the same desire to understand culture from all over through time.
That's neat. And both of you, you know, keep expressing the joy that you have of turning and learning and growing and so forth. Now, again, both of you are working for a world language publishing company. How could tie a little more closely your own love and understanding of language and culture to your professional decisions and directions?
I can say that, you know, working for Vistas, and when I found that company, which for me has been 12 years ago, it's like a coming home when you get to connect with all of the different cultures. And it's the most beautiful, easy bridge to be in a faculty member's office and have shared experiences. Generally, they're, you know, have come in from other countries, so have you. Now you're here in this beautiful melting pot that is the U.S., but you know, we all share a love of language, which ultimately leads to a love of culture and travel. And so we've been to the same places on different days, and it is the most heartwarming of easy conversations. And when you have that shared kind of experience, you know, the rest, the job part of the day is actually easily done, because it's on a basis of friendship and global citizenry and all of that good stuff.
That's cool. Thank you. Charlotte, how about for you?
Yeah, so I think very similarly, you know, the connection that I build when I visit faculty, and I remember very distinctly the first time someone explained it to me in a way that I really understood, and I've hung on to it when I was studying anthropology, that in linguistics, that the Eskimos, you know, in Alaska have so many more words to describe what type of snow falls. And I can't remember if it was 1,000 or, you know, 100 words, but and that reflects the fact that they live in this completely frozen world where different types of snow that falls really tells you about the climate or the temperature that's coming or what kind of weather they might be experiencing or what kind of animals they might be able to find. And that, you know, if you can learn another language, you suddenly open this entire door to a different culture and outlook and experience. And you can only get that through learning the language or reading the literature or visiting. You know, it's not something you can experience any other way. And to me, once you start to see things from another culture's perspective or another person's perspective, then you really start to learn about the world and human beings and culture. So I love, you know, having any opportunity to find out about a person's experience if it's different than mine in particular. And language, you know, the study of language and culture is the best avenue for that.
No, you were speaking about global citizenship, and it strikes me that the kind of phrases that both of you are using are about, like, as it were, the world becomes one's culture, and any language you come across can become part of your language grouping. It seems much more inclusive. Do you think that that's true? And is it your backgrounds that have created this? Your professions that have created this? What kinds of ways might others take a look at what you're experiencing in this way, if I have expressed it properly?
Yeah, I think I think it expands your curiosity and You know, I've been to many places that were so different from the backdrop of where I've grown up. You know, my territory for sales at a previous company used to be Asia. And I mean, just amazing the things you observe and see. And but it teaches you to be much more curious, but also understanding. And it just kind of broadens your horizons. It delivers so much. It just helps really expand the mind and, you know, just the potential is unlimited for what you can see and observe.
Unlimited potential. That sounds cool. How about for you, Charlotte? What do you see?
Yeah. So when I hear global citizen, you know, it sounds very big and expansive. But I also think that in many ways, when you start understanding that each, you know, that our differences almost unite us. You know, we feel very comfortable in our own communities and our own, you know, whether it's our school or our workplace or our neighborhood. And then when you step outside of that community and you start to learn about other ones, you feel like a stranger. But then having those conversations and learning about somebody else's life and hearing how they feel like a stranger, then you have a common experience. So almost by exploring all these different cultures and peoples and, you know, communities, you really then become a common people. So what divides us can ultimately unite us. Does that make sense?
Oh, it sure does. It sure does. And so I turned next part of that question that is impressing me about what you guys are saying is, with your backgrounds as folks having come from families or you're directly from different countries and different linguistic groups or at least cultural groups, do you feel that the United States has a kind of a different approach to the understanding of language and culture than those areas from which you came? Or are there more similarities than differences? Can you express a little bit about that?
Do you mind if I go first, Yvan?
No, please. This is a perfect pairing.
The Dutch are the opposite of Americans in terms of how they view language. So I've said this before, tiny country. No one speaks their language unless you were born there. And so from a very young age, and when I say young, I mean 3 or 4 years old, children are exposed to other languages. They learn in elementary school French, German, English, Spanish, Latin, and Greek in high school. So they are, you know, you can run into any citizen of the Netherlands and they will speak multiple languages, and it is, you know, natural to them, and it's a survival. You know, they wouldn't be able to live in the global community without being able to learn another language. And the U.S. has always been, you know, very English centric. The fact that we call it a foreign language instead of, now I think we're getting a little bit better about modern language or world languages. But the way that we have always kind of set it out as being something different and strange. And then, of course, learning languages much too late. When you start learning a language in high school, you've really already started to close that door of being able to acquire a foreign language more easily. You know, you can do it, and people certainly do. But studies indicate that learning a language from a much younger age makes it much more of a natural, you know, you can truly become bilingual or trilingual the younger you start. So I feel like I see a change in some areas of this country where people are starting to embrace learning a second language at a much earlier age, or looking at bilingualism as being, you know, something that is to be envied or to be embraced. So, you know, I have hope that we're changing in this country and how we look at languages. And I think it's kind of an ebb and flow. You know, we make some steps forward and then we take a step back. But there's definitely a different approach to how one learns a language in the Netherlands versus the United States.
Thank you for that. How about you, Yvan?
I agree with everything Charlotte says. And I've always known that about the Dutch. I remember being in Amsterdam and meeting this young guy, and he was trying to guess where I was from. And I was just you know, speaking in Irish, but, and he peddled through about 9 languages, but he didn't have Irish. But in Ireland, the country is tiny as well. And so, we were always exposed to languages. You know, I started with Latin, Irish, then French. So it was just part of our curriculum. I guess as the size of the U.S. and the differentiation, you know, our perspective when we had never, prior to coming to America, is everything was New York City, you know, or Los Angeles from whatever shows we might have been exposed mm-hmm. to. But I distinctly remember being at Kansas State University where I was a GTA in German, and I was doing the section on travel and the train stations in Germany. And I asked the class of 30 students, has everyone here, of course, been on a train? And one kid raised his hand who had been, and it was because he was an ROTC student and he had taken the train up to training or something. But they all had 2 cars, one for the farm and one for college, you know, one for navigating 2,000 acres of barbed wire. And in that moment, I was like, oh, this is different. Yeah. So I, you know, our own child grew up in Northern Virginia, where, you know, his school district had a whole week or two of language samplers, and he could have chosen from Japanese and Chinese. And so it's probably quite regional, but I would hope we could always hold on to the notion of learning language, because to me it's the great hook that really helps expand your credentials, your world vision, and that and we need it for business, right? And connection.
I was going to say credentials to do what?
Well, my husband was in the military, and we ended up our first job living in Columbus, Georgia at Fort Benning. And there weren't that many jobs around, but I ended up, and this is a long time ago, working for a company that made huge cotton gins, and they sold those to the Côte d'Ivoire. And so all of a sudden I found myself as the interpreter with my, you know, 5 years of rote learning with the nuns. But I was the person that got hired to do the translation work for the visitors who came in from the Ivory Coast to buy that. So it that credential alone got me that job in a place where there weren't that many jobs. Mm-hmm. So it's just always been a very helpful add-on.
It's interesting. It's how I got my career started too, by chance having the credential of having taken French. How about for you, Charlotte?
It's the same story. I'm just giggling over here because I think every single job I've ever had has been because I speak another language. My first job was at a law firm, at a patent law firm, actually. And they just needed someone who could understand. I worked for the international department, that a Japanese client had different expectations than a French client, who had different expectations than a German client, who had different expectations than a French client, you know, because culturally putting, you know, making a mistake or being on time, those are completely different depending on who you're working with. And they just needed somebody who could understand that and not approach every customer or client with the same attitude. And that was a very important lesson to begin with. Then I did use my German and my Dutch and my French a little bit in that job, but mostly it was just being able to understand that people have different cultural expectations. And my first teaching job was, you know, I was trying to break into Northern Virginia public school systems, which is very hard to do, and they were desperate for a German teacher. Now, I don't think I was ever qualified to truly teach German, but I was somebody who they could put in that classroom mm-hmm. until they could find a better person. And that led to me becoming a teacher at that high school for 10 years. So absolutely being able to speak another language. And it got me my job where I am now, where I'm also very, just as Yvonne said, it was a perfect mix. I taught English, I did some German, and I taught publishing. And how I ended up at this, you know, publishing company for modern languages, it's the perfect combination of my skill set. But I don't think I would have gotten an interview if I didn't speak another language. So I think it's opened every door for me And I've been very grateful that my parents, had the wherewithal to raise me bilingually and to expose me to French and German from the beginning. And we were world travelers as well. Culture and traditions were always a huge part of the conversation, history and world history, all those things. I think that languages has been an integral part of my career and my personal life. Absolutely.
Opening doors. And sometimes you didn't even know the doors and the windows were there, but language brought it out. So thank you so much, because sharing those powerful stories about how those doors opened in your lives. So speaking in your lives, and now turn to, if you would, visualize those that are listening to this podcast today. Let's give those folks that are listening a final word. What would you invite them to do? What would you warn them? What would you exhort them? What's your advice for the listeners today?
Ivana, if it's okay, I'll jump in first again. So I've been thinking about this a little bit, and I think sometimes people are very afraid of learning a new language. It's very daunting. So I would say, at least expose yourself to culture. Read a book that's been translated from another language that gives you some outlook to another person's culture. Listen to music from other countries. If you can watch a movie with subtitles, but exposing yourself to other languages and other cultures starts to open that door. And if nothing else, it helps you get perspective from the people you live around, because as Ivan said, the U.S. is a melting pot, and we do live in a global society. And just allowing yourself to learn a little bit more about the people who live in this world with us, I think it's life changing. And maybe if you open that door a little bit, you will learn, you'll be sparked to learn another language. So that's my advice to those who do not yet speak another language.
Thanks, Charlotte. How about you, Ivan?
I don't know if I'm as succinct on a Friday afternoon, but I'm going to. It's so funny because I had written down a couple of quotes that spoke to me, and I think we've said this quote ourselves. We could have written it if we didn't know it already existed. It's the one language sets you in a corridor for life, and two languages open every door along the way. And then Fellini, who said a different language is a different vision of life. So I'm just thinking, 2 years ago, I had for me, felt like a life-changing trip when I hiked to Machu Picchu, and my guide was this young Quechuan man, and, I saw where he came from, and just the simplicity of his life growing up, and just how simple it was, but how happy he was, and there's that vision that is built. It's to understand another language, understand another culture and another vision, that there's different ways to grow and be. And it only helps you to embrace that and take that path in life. So learn language, live language, I would say.
Thank you so much, Ivan. And thank both of you. You've shared so beautifully today of your own life and your own experiences and your insights into language and culture as it affects not only yourselves, but also those around you. I appreciate this very, very much. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with your friends, family, and colleagues. Let's continue the conversation. Be sure to check out my website, fluencyonline.com, to learn more about our guests and to check out the resources and information they've shared with us there. I have other ideas, resources, and opportunities there for you too. Again, thanks so much for listening, and until next time.